I'm just going to start us off before CJ comes to read from Matthew's Gospel, chapter 5. You should have a Bible near you when we're going to read that together. And we've been spending these last few weeks here in the evening service thinking about the parables and Jesus teaching people through these unsettling, curious kind of stories that the kingdom of God was coming and has come in him. And that is an unsettling and awesome thing that he was teaching. And so the stories niggle and provoke and kind of get under your skin. And they're often not straightforward. They were often certainly repeated by the communities that they were first told to because they just kind of niggled away. But I remember one of my friends at Theological College once getting really mad at Isaiah the prophet for writing in poetry rather than in bullet points. He's saying, why aren't there just bullet points about what the coming of the Messiah looks like? I just need to see an ABC. So tonight, we're kind of wrapping up this series on Jesus' teaching with, if not bullet points, then something which is quite a bit more direct and straightforward about Jesus' teaching. And it reminds me of someone once said, Jonathan told me it was Kierkegaard, that it's not the parts of the Bible that I find hard to understand that really bother me. It's the parts that I find all too easy to understand. And that kind of comes to me with the piece that we're about to hear read for us. But before CJ comes to read, my encouragement is to remember that the gospel is not good advice, it's good news. You can have that on your Jenny bingo card, I say it often. The gospel is not good advice, it's good news. Jesus, as we hear this teaching, is not climbing the mountaintop to give advice on a good life. He's climbing the mountain in a deliberate echo of Moses climbing the mountain to announce something, to announce a kingdom. So picture the United Kingdom of Britain and Ireland. What are the things that have shaped this kingdom? It's a human kingdom. So it's been shaped by human sinfulness as well as human potential. Our country's history contains within it arrogance and pride and cruelty and violence and greed, the horrific sins of slave trade and colonization, as well as stories of courage and solidarity and creativity, like the imagination to create something like the NHS. And there's a conversation that's really important and alive about what kind of markers there are of this kingdom, the United Kingdom. And one of the reasons this is an important conversation is that what is recognized and repeated and celebrated shapes a kingdom and shapes imaginations, shapes hopes, shapes dreams, shapes aspirations. So what we're about to hear from the Bible, sometimes called the Beatitudes, from the word to be blessed, but they can be also translated in a few different ways. What we're about to hear says blessed are, but it can also say happy are, or wonderful news for these people and these people. In the United Kingdom of Britain and Ireland, some of our statues and what's carved into our monuments could say who receives the wonderful news of recognition, who's blessed with a legacy, who's happy because their lives are valued. Some stuff about our kingdom tells us what those things are about. They're about this earthly kingdom. And the same happens with advertising. If you think about your Instagram feed, in a way, it's kind of communicating something to us. Happy are these people. Wonderful news for these people if you get this. The algorithms throw things out at us to tell us who is happy, who there's wonderful news about, who's blessed. So imagine instead if the words that we're about to hear were carved into monuments and buildings. Imagine if the words we're about to hear popped up on our timelines and our news feeds. Imagine if these were the earworms that got stuck in our heads and that we hummed as we walked around the streets of our city. Now, I find these words so powerful that I think the first thing we're going to do with them is just sit with them in quietness after CJ's read them. So we'll just have a moment of just letting them sit in us, and then I'll just come and share a few thoughts. So CJ, thanks for being patient with my long introduction. Do come up and share. Matthew 5.
The Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 5. Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on the mountainside and sat down. His disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying, Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called sons of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled by men. You are the light of the world. A city on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. For the gift of the word.
There's so much in those words, and I think so much in those words when there's a lot of talk about what new normal looks like. And I wonder if those words shaped our new normal, what the United Kingdom of Britain and Ireland would start to look like. N.T. Wright says that these words are a summons to live in the present in such a way that will make sense in God's promised future. These words are a summons to live in the present in such a way that will make sense in God's promised future. These words, scarcely need saying, aren't generally carved into monuments or popping up on our timelines. We live in earthly kingdoms today, but Jesus announces that this is the kingdom that is coming and has come in his life. And so, yes, these happy are, these blessed are, these wonderful news for this list is entirely different from the earthly kingdom that we live in. The kingdom of Jesus often runs counter to the kingdoms of the world. And so when we live according to this kingdom, sometimes it does make no sense. Sometimes it looks odd. I listened to a podcast the other day called the Lifefulness Podcast. There's loads to say about it, but one thing that was especially interesting, they talked about money, about giving, and the presenter, who doesn't have a Christian or another religious faith, talked about a Jewish woman who had the practice of giving, tithing, so giving a tenth of her income as a token of the fact that everything comes from God. This is a practice that's been taken into the Christian life from Jewish teaching. And the presenter was telling about an interview with this Jewish woman in which she was asked, well, what do you get from this regular practice of giving away 10% of your income? And she said, well, if I got anything, it wouldn't be a gift, would it? There was a kind of a sense that generosity, giving, didn't make sense in an earthly kingdom. I came across these words: we give as a practice of counterformation to cultivate our hearts in the direction of generosity. So God's promised future kingdom has been pioneered in Jesus, and it's coming in full. I don't know if you caught our morning service this morning, but I just loved the time of worship this morning when the band sang these words. And one day we'll see him in all of his glory. Our kingdom is our king is returning, and all will sing. One day we'll see him in all of his glory. Our king is returning, and all will sing. This is coming. And any glimpse of joy that we have today in him will pale before what it is to see the face of Jesus face to face. And any memories of what has been hard in this life will be caught up in his magnificence. And all tears will be wiped away in this coming kingdom. And here what we're shown metaphorically, because it's not about statues, but we're shown metaphorically what will be carved into the statues and the monuments of this coming kingdom, what will be hummed on the streets. We don't see it directly. We glimpse it in worship. We see it in prayer. We encounter it in Jesus. We glimpse it. We see it through a glass darkly, but one day we'll see it face to face. Which means that what is around us, this earthly kingdom, seems so much more vivid and real that we easily fall into patterns of celebrating what this kingdom, the United Kingdom, tells us to celebrate, or disregarding or undervaluing what this kingdom tells us to disregard and undervalue. But the kingdom of Jesus, the kingdom that is announced in Jesus' words from the top of the mountain, is the lasting one, is the realest one, is the most vivid one. It won a victory when Jesus died and rose again, because it won a victory over the weapon of the tyrant and the terrorist, the weapon of the earthly kingdom. Jesus won a victory over it, so we know his kingdom is the triumphant one. But how do we remember? How do we reset ourselves to Jesus' kingdom when we see all around us much more vividly sometimes the monuments and the statues and the things that this kingdom celebrates, or the current kingdom celebrates? How do we reset ourselves to Jesus' kingdom? Blessed are those who are poor in spirit. We reset ourselves when we recall that we are empty without Jesus to fill us. We turn dependently, daily, desperately, urgently to Jesus in prayer and worship. That's how we reset ourselves. Blessed are the meek. We turn off the signals of what this kingdom values. We have Sabbath breaks from our media, from our social media, from our advertising, from all the things that feed us from the current kingdom. It's really good to take Sabbath breaks from it so we reset ourselves in order we can be recreated after the pattern that God, our maker, has got for us. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. We give as a reset, as a defiant gesture that God's kingdom, which is ours in Jesus, is one that riches are best spent in giving them away. One thing I noted about this Beatitudes list is that actually the only thing that's about activity, and the only activity that's mentioned, is peacemaking. Everything else is about an identity, about who is celebrated. So it's not about a to-do list earning our blessing. It's an announcement who is already blessed, who is already receiving the recognition, the turning of Jesus, God's face towards them, a celebration, the place in the kingdom of Jesus. Blessed are those who are poor in spirit, who know their need of God. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. I'm going to read some of the version of this from the Message translation. Different way of hearing some of these words. You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there is more of God and his rule. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. You're blessed when you're content with just who you are. No more, no less. That's the moment you find yourself proud owners of everything that can't be bought. You're blessed when you've worked up a good appetite for God. He's food and drink in the best meal you'll ever eat. You're blessed when your commitment to God provokes persecution. The persecution drives you even deeper into God's kingdom. Not only that, count yourselves blessed every time people put you down or throw you out or speak lies about you to discredit me. What it means is that the truth is too close to comfort and they are uncomfortable. You can be glad when that happens. Give a cheer even, for even though they don't like it, I do, and all of heaven applauds. And know that you are in good company. My prophets and witnesses have always gotten into this kind of trouble. It's good to reset ourselves on God's kingdom because of all that surrounds us about this current kingdom. And that will sometimes mean that we run into ways of this kingdom that oppose the ways of Jesus's kingdom. And where we reset ourselves to God's kingdom again and again, when we're nourished by his kingdom again and again, we're given strength, we're given nourishment, we're given health, of heart, mind, and soul, so that we can once again face up to what is oppositional about the kingdom of God. So before I close and we come to be nourished and sustained at our King's table, at Jesus's table, this phrase, my prophets and witnesses, have always gotten into this kind of trouble, made me think of John Lewis, who some of you will recall died a few months ago. He was a senator in the US, the United States of America, and came from a background in the civil rights movement alongside Martin Luther King. And he said, "Don't get lost in a sea of despair. Be hopeful, be optimistic. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in some good trouble, some necessary trouble." So John Lewis was a man who lived in the truth of the coming kingdom of Revelation 7:9, where every nation, tribe and tongue will worship the Lamb together. He lived the truth of that kingdom in the face of an earthly kingdom which divided and segregated and oppressed. He lived the truth that the divisions of racist policies, they were the temporary thing, and the lasting thing of justice and peace, because that's God's kingdom, that's the lasting thing. That's the permanent thing. He joined a group of 13 freedom riders when he was just 21 to ride segregated buses, and they received astonishing levels of violence in return, but were utterly committed to a different way, the way of peaceful protest, living as though Jesus's kingdom, a different kingdom, was the lasting one. And I just wanted to show you this picture, which is a picture of him when he was first arrested for using a white bathroom, his first of many, many arrests. And he said that the reason that he's smiling in this picture, when he was arrested, he smiled because he knew that he was on the right side of history. He just knew that a different kingdom was the lasting one. He just knew that this present kingdom, with its injustice and with its oppression, was passing away, and that he was living the values of a future kingdom today. He was living beatitude values today. He was simply choosing to live into the values of peacemaking, of hungering and thirsting for God's justice and righteousness, and not in the values of a passing away kingdom that he lived in. Could we do this? Could we smile in the face of arrest, even in the face of violence? I don't think I could without being nourished by Jesus. I don't think I can without knowing his nourishment and resetting my life on him day by day, week by week, month by month.